Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Opioid addiction is an affliction found in every corner of American society, a public health scourge which has been maddeningly difficult to resolve in recent decades. Later this hour, we'll look at efforts to combat heroin and other opioid addictions in the city of Philadelphia and the suburbs. But first, the story of Airbridge. Airbridge has been billed as a way out for poverty-stricken heroin addicts on the island of Puerto Rico, a program which offers the treatment they crave, but in rich cities on the mainland like Philadelphia. Police, ministers, and public officials in Puerto Rico tout treatment centers in Philly as shining examples of rehab with every comfort imaginable and a clean life after the program is over. But what these addicts have found instead are unsupervised, dilapidated so-called treatment facilities located in the Kensington area, which is also known as the largest open-air drug market on the East Coast. So suffice it to say, the prognosis for recovery through Airbridge seems to be very poor. Alfred Lubrano has covered this story extensively for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he joins us now to tell us more. Al Lubrano, good to have you back with us for Radio Times.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And also, I do want to give the phone number out if you'd like to join us with your comments and questions. 888-477-9499 is the number. You can send us an email at Radio Times at WHYY.org or a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. So the story of Airbridge took you to a number of places, to Puerto Rico, to Kensington, to a homeless camp called El Campamento. Let's begin in Puerto Rico with a young man named Kelvin Alderondo, a heroin addict who was introduced to Airbridge on the island. Tell us about him.
Yeah, actually, we didn't meet Kelvin in Puerto Rico, but I talked to his mom. Mm-hmm. She lives in an area that's kind of rural near the Caribbean. And in a very small house that was filled with a very big problem, which was Kelvin's addiction. There were other kids in the house. There was a husband, but everything was focused on Kelvin's difficulties. So this woman was just beside herself. Persita Ramos is her name. I didn't know what to do, trying to figure out how do I save my kid. And one day, somebody who knows her said that there's a cop around and there's a minister. This very unlikely pairing is not so unlikely in Puerto Rico, where everybody is Christian, and there's not as much separation church and state as we're used to here. So these guys worked together, and they said to her, you know, there's a great place in Philadelphia. Just send him. If you love him, send him. You know, there's a little bit of pressure. There's always that undertone that, well, you know, are you doing everything you can for him? You know, and there's that little bit of a sell there. And she consulted with her former husband, who's Kelvin's dad, and they got the money together, and it wasn't easy. I mean, she's a registered nurse. She's not impoverished, but at the same time, there are other kids. There are other problems in the home.
Sure.
So, but they got the money together, and they sent them in, and the cops helped take them. One-way ticket to Philadelphia. They said there were going to be horses. There was going to be pools. Everybody's told there are going to be pools to swim in. I don't know why that's a particular selling point, but everyone's told that particular lie. And then he shows up in February in Kensington and sees a much different place than he expected.
What did he find?
Well, what he saw was Soldiers of the Lord, which is a recovery house on Front Street. And it had about 20, 25 guys crammed in there in a place that could probably hold about 20. Two or three bathrooms, everyone on bunk beds, living under the L.
Clean?
I wouldn't say it was dirty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't say it wasn't. I've been in it, but strange, there's a sanctuary in there for prayer, and it's just the most dilapidated looking thing with no ceiling tiles and wires drooping down, hanging around. It's kind of depressing and sad. And the whole place has the smell of kind of hopelessness, you know, hopelessness and crammed in men is the odor. And they just meet every day and pretty much were told every day how weak they were, how awful they were, how much they brought misery upon themselves. The exact wrong things that you should say to a to someone who's addicted to drugs.
There's no methadone. There are no other medicines to help.
He said there weren't. That's not clear. Kelvin said that there weren't. And they would have to go to another facility, a drug treatment facility, where they had some group therapy. And it's not clear the exact arrangements there. I know that in other recovery houses and situations like this, the recovery houses will get money back from – they'll get like paid $100 a head a session from the treatment center, which is in turn getting federal money probably, mm-hmm. Medicaid or something like that. And so everybody is making money as these young men – it's mostly men. Men are shuttled back and forth between the recovery house and the treatment center. Sometimes Kelvin said he went unescorted. There would just be a couple of these young men, just imagine, from Puerto Rico. Many of them never saw snow before, never felt this kind of cold before, expecting pools, expecting horses, expecting something more uplifting. They're in this depressing place, and they're being walked under the L.
Which is part of the open air drug market area?
Yeah.
And were they given clothing? Were they given coats, gloves, anything to
and
deal with?
Whatever he brought with him. Or whatever his family would provide, and he felt lost, and he felt berated by the operators of the house, and you could literally see drug dealers outside the windows. These guys are usually locked in, which LNI is telling everyone now, of course, is a great hazard and against the law. You could literally see. Drug dealers outside waiting for them, sometimes trying to, use baskets that they will pull up to the window to, exchange money and drugs and things like that. It's just a mad, crazy scene.
So this is not the only – Soldiers of the Lord is not the only recovery house like this in the Kensington area.
No. We know there are about 150 – recovery houses in Frankfurt and Kensington. Not all of them are the same. We can't paint them all with the same brush.
How many are associated with Airbridge? Did you get a sense of that in your
No,
recording?
We have no way of knowing that. Mm.
This has flown under the radar for years, if not decades.
Well, it depends on who's looking at the radar screen. There are some people, for example, in Prevention Point, which is a needle exchange place that helps drug addicts. They've known about it all along because they talk to the drug addicts. The rest of the city, it's gone under. For the rest of the city, it seems to have gone under the radar. I talked to the Philadelphia office of the FBI, the Philadelphia office of the DEA, also the district attorney's office, none of whom said they had even heard of this. And I have to say that I've been covering poverty for 8 years. I've been a reporter in the city for a while. I never heard of it. Other reporters who've been here for a while hadn't heard of it. They knew about the encampment. They knew about this place in Fairhill where there are HIV-positive homeless drug addicts living along the Conrail tracks. That's been written about.
Sure.
And that's been talked about. Also, a quite intractable problem. No one seems to know quite how to address it, but Airbridge is a larger phenomenon that just has gone unseen.
And it's not just Philadelphia; it also is associated with a couple of other cities in the country.
Yeah, primarily New York and Chicago.
So basically, the scene is you have officials in Puerto Rico, whether they're public officials or police or ministers, saying, recognizing that there is this problem of addiction. They don't have the treatment facilities in Puerto Rico, and they're saying, here, go to Philadelphia or Chicago or New York, and you will find the answers. And then their problem dissipates?
Well, they have fewer drug addicts. Initially, I thought
problem in quotation marks, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Initially, I thought, well, these guys in Puerto Rico must be making money off of this. Hmm. But now I'm not so sure. I mean, it's possible. Anything's possible. But I think the primary motivation was to clear the public square of junkies, essentially. Mm-hmm. Puerto Rico has had its manufacturing and other industries devastated. What they rely greatly on these days is tourist dollars. And so the mayor's pretty much decided that, maybe tourists don't want to see homeless drug addicts hanging around. So they thought this was a win. They thought this was a neat solution.
So your sense is that this is a scam? Airbridge?
Yeah. In many ways, it certainly seems that way. Mm. When I ask the officials in Puerto Rico, what feedback are you getting from Philadelphia? In other words, are you hearing that it's working? Are you hearing that these guys are doing well? Everybody in Puerto Rico says, oh, yeah, we heard it was great. But then...
So what's the reality?
Well, the reality is it's not. And when you talk to psychologists in Puerto Rico, when you talk to academics in Puerto Rico, who are just now, by the way, getting wind of this, they'll say, no, we just keep hearing more and more horror stories about these young men who are sold a bill of goods, come looking for treatment because they really do want to get better. And they wind up, because a lot of these houses will take their IDs to control them, a lot of these houses will make sure that they apply for food stamps so that they can use that money. And when they run afoul of one of the draconian rules of the house, and that's fairly expected, they almost want you to run afoul of the rules, they get kicked out. Mm-hmm. So you have these young men with no ID, no way to speak or be understood, and wandering around one of the biggest drug markets in the United States. Many times they'll try and call their families if they can get hold of a phone, but their families don't believe them anymore because they're drug addicts and because they've lied or because there's been this bad blood between them. And often the men who run the recovery houses will stoke this problem by speaking to the parents and saying, oh, no, he's lying to you. Everything would have been fine if only he had listened. And it just becomes this big mess.
We're coming up on a break. Al, but tell us about Kelvin Aldarondo. So he got to the city and he ended up in the Soldiers of the Lord Recovery House. And where is he today?
He is through a series of interventions by other people who were trying to help his mom. He wound up, he's now in just a place I will not say where he is because his safety had been threatened because he talked to me.
Mm.
But
he's not back in Puerto Rico. He is
He's still in the United States. Well, Puerto Rico is in the United States. But with luck, he'll get back to the island at some
point. The recovery house did not work for him?
No.
All right. More on this story in just a moment. Our guest for the first part of the hour, Al Lebrano, who is the poverty reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, 888-477-9499. Stay with us. Welcome back to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, and Al Lebrano is with us. He is the Philadelphia Inquirer reporter who has written an in-depth look at shall we call it a scam, perhaps called Airbridge. We're kind of investigating that story for the first part of the hour here on Radio Times. And we're going to get to some comments in just a moment. But I just wanted to know, I mean, again, we're talking about not only police and mayors, but ministers in Puerto Rico. And then in one of your articles, Al, you quote Juan Aponte, a Pentecostal minister from Kensington, who says some of these ministers, you know, they're promoting Airbridge using God's name. Are some of them aware, at least aware of what they're sending people to in Philadelphia, that it's not, you know, as you write, a Pennsylvania paradise where dope hunger is erased?
I can't imagine that people don't know in Puerto Rico at this point. I went to a homeless center in Arecibo, Puerto Rico, which sends more people to Philadelphia than any other city. And I was talking to the psychologist who runs it. And he was saying that men were canceling their trips to Philadelphia that very week, and his statement to me was, "Philadelphia is a chaos. We don't want to send them to." Similarly, when I was at the University University of Puerto Rico in San Juan, and the academics are just now opening their eyes to this, and they too have been hearing from groups. There's a group of about 315 injection drug users under study by NIH, and they were not there to talk about Airbridge. They were just there to talk about the problem in Puerto Rico of drug use. But one by one, they just started mentioning to the researcher, Roberto Abade from the University of Nebraska, and he was stunned to realize that, oh my God, this is actually happening. So now he started sharing it with the other faculty, and so you have this amalgam of the public health professors as well as the law professors trying to figure out what laws are being broken, what's happening to these people, and what can be done.
All right. Let's get to some comments. We've got an email from Sandra in Lansdale who asks, was this situation bordering thus far on human trafficking known to authorities before the investigative report? Are there no quality controls from funders of services, and are recovery houses regulated? So a few questions but human trafficking, I mean, Sergeant John Massey of the 26th Police District is quoted in one of your articles as saying, Airbridge seems like, quote, organized crime, and it may violate federal statutes beyond Commonwealth laws.
Right. And actually, Stephen Schwinn, who's a professor of human rights at John Marshall Law School, said it goes beyond human trafficking. He calls it torture. And he's petitioned the United Nations to look into this as well. It goes beyond local laws for that sense. He thinks it's international. These houses are not regulated, so that's one of the problems. Many of these houses, you have to kind of think of them as just being like a private house. You just can't walk in there and demand that this happen or that happen, or we want to see this or that. The police can't do that. The only people who are allowed to go into these places are L&I, licenses and inspections, and they're there essentially just to look at municipal code violations, problems with the physical nature of the house. They can't say, you're hurting young men from Puerto Rico here.
Well, how do these recovery houses, so-called recovery houses, escape regulation, legislative oversight?
They kind of grew up beyond everyone's scope and purview over the years. Some people call it a Wild West kind of dynamic. They happened to develop after a lot of people left the neighborhood, and there were a lot of vacant houses, and people sort of kind of jumped in there. Now, I mean, ironically, Philadelphia has a good reputation for drug treatment. And these guys kind of just piggybacked on that and made it sound like they too were providing good works for people.
Let's talk, Al, about collateral damage to the neighborhood. You touched on El Campamento a little bit earlier in the show, the people who live there. And again, it's located, what, by the Conrail tracks in Fairhill?
Yes.
So give us a description. In one of your articles, you talk about the hallmark of this camp, which is the heroin needle.
Yeah, it's actually kind of organized down there in a way that you don't really notice at first. But there are kind of sentries there, and there are so-called sergeants at arms, and there are guards, and there are people who guard the place.
Self-appointed.
Well, yeah, kind of like mayors, in a sense. They sort of tell newcomers how to deal with it, and it's important to note that most of the people using drugs in this area are white people. They're coming in from the suburbs, where in the mornings you can stand there and you can see them come off the train or come in cabs and you know get their fix and then go on with their lives. And a lot of the camp is not Airbridge. A lot of the camp is, you'll see a lot of these like teenagers from Montgomery County or somewhere.
So people from all walks of life at this camp.
Yeah. I think that there's a a minority are average people.
But there are, would you call that minority still a significant number of people or a handful of people? How would you characterize
that?
It might
be around a quarter of the population. Right. And we're talking, and the population shifts. So I've been told it's anywhere between 75 and 120 people at any given time. There are little huts there, or mostly people grab together whatever they can, wood, canvas, and whatever to make shelter. Some of them live under a bridge that's there. There is one place that's kind of like a shooting gallery where they go to get the heroin. A lot of times it happens by about 10 in the morning. People are first starting to fix. Yeah. And a lot of people have to inject more than once during the day.
So at this point in the conversation, let's bring Maria Quiñones Sanchez into the conversation. She is the Philadelphia City Councilwoman for the 7th District. A number of the Air Bridge Recovery Houses are in the district. Also, this encampment is in the district. So welcome back to Radio Times, Maria.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to shed some more light on what has been an evolving problem for almost 20 years now, I would say. This has been the recovery house situation was one that when I first got elected, I kind of inherited and did not realize. And I would put the number in the 2434 zip code closer to 300 recovery houses. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of time using the municipal code and LNI to go out and visit what the houses that we were aware of, shutting down some of the houses. We found 20, 30 men living in some of these places. We've intervened in many ways. And as Alfred said, as hard as Air Bridge is, it only represents a quarter of what is kind of the daily containment that has been allowed to kind of just happen in this sector in the city.
Have you heard from Mayor Kenney on this?
We have not talked directly, although this administration, more so than the previous administration, we've been working with a high-level task force that includes the managing director's office, the streets department, LNI, and all of the department heads. We've invested millions of dollars in the area, mostly on aesthetics. We've shut down houses. We've demolished houses. We've resealed houses that have been used as shooting galleries. The streets department has spent quite a bit of money lighting up the place. And more importantly, we've been in this debate about what do we do with Conrail, who's allowed this encampment to squat its property and has been unwilling to be a good steward of their land.
Has Conrail responded, either Maria or Al, to queries about why this encampment?
We've taken everybody through a tour there, Councilman Dom and myself. Conrail lawyers have been at the table in some of these discussions. They spent the last year cleaning up the area on the bottom in their tracks because they have increased traffic, which means they're making a lot more money transporting stuff. And because of that, we've really have tried to amplify the message that we're like minutes away from a tragedy every single day. Mm-hmm. The fact that you have so many users in an area where there's high traffic trains coming through with chemicals and other things. But they have been unwilling. And unfortunately, the city has been a little gun shy about what legal authority we have to force Conrail, CSX in this case, and everyone to be responsible.
So Maria Quiñones Sanchez, describe how the opioid heroin crisis and also Air Bridge have impacted the families, the mothers, the fathers, the children who live in your district.
For me, it's been very emotional in that I feel that you have a Puerto Rican community really trapped in what has evolved. And the characters have evolved over time. For a long time, the drug dealers in the area were people from the neighborhood. So, everybody knew Doña Juana and so forth. What we've had in the last 4 or 5 years is a growing drug dealing, a sector that doesn't come from the area and doesn't speak Spanish, which if you look at the crime statistics, has heightened the level of gun violence that has really evolved in this area. So you have a Puerto Rican poor community, majority African-American and other folks dealing drugs, and then this huge influx of white suburbanites. And it's like the perfect storm. And I just feel like if any of those racial demographics were different, we'd have the military in there. But I feel like it's you have a Puerto Rican community that is poor, that for the most part cannot speak English, and people have just contained it to its three or four blocks. You know, I was talking to Dr. Generals from Community College the other day who got lost and ended up in this area. And he was astonished that in a major urban city like Philadelphia, this has been allowed to happen.
So Al Lobrano, as you've reported on poverty for years, as you said, for the Philadelphia Inquirer, this sort of situation, what tends to be the reaction on the federal, the state, and the local levels? It's existed for decades.
You're talking about Airbridge?
Well, Airbridge, and also I know you've worked, you know, in the Kensington area, the 7th District, where you have you know, poverty and you have drugs and you've got people coming from all areas to come in.
Yeah, when I think about this, I think about something that somebody told me. You remember that there was an old bumper sticker that used to say, if if men could have babies, abortion would be a sacrament. Similarly, people said to me, if Kensington were and the camp were in Rittenhouse Square, this would have been cleared up overnight. And I think that there's a lot to that. I think one of the reasons that you had a lot of these recovery houses there is because the kind of NIMBYism that you might get in other places. When you're talking about an area of people, Puerto Rican people, many of them from the island, you know, poor, unused to the region, and then things are happening around them. Well, they don't always have the wherewithal or to come together and say, well, we have to stop this. We have to do this. I think it's happening more now.
I was going to ask, are you seeing an increased response? I mean, your look at Airbridge in the Inquirer has been published, a week or so, you know, in the course of a couple of weeks. Are you seeing a response, an interest in tackling this problem, you know, perhaps even a lessening of the situation with Airbridge?
I think that there are good people who want to do it. I think it's very difficult to try and figure out just what you do or how you do it. I mean, people can't even figure out, is it federal? Is it state? That kind of thing. And it just makes it that much harder.
I think it's important because this is really layered. We've been working with the DEA's office and some of the federal government oversight around this, and I was really pleased to see Surgeon General's report on addiction, because it goes back to the opium abuse that exists in this area. And one of the things that in our work with the federal government, who really looked at the data sets for us, you know, highest level of opium sales by our pharmacies, 1,200 doctors providing prescriptions in the 7th Councilmatic District. It is a perfect storm of everything that's gone wrong with the lack of oversight of everybody. I think the prescription exchange that the database is going to be helpful. But, you know, we have folks, the opium addiction that takes them right into the heroin addiction.
And the 7th District gets hit really hard.
1,200 doctors who are prescribing opiates in the district. So it's
in
not
the 7th district?
In the 7th district. So I don't not only have to worry about the open air markets, then we have to monitor these doctors. And in fact, the feds, the DA's office has made several major arrests over the last year in response to us saying, what do we do?
Well, in hitting the ground running, perhaps attacking it from, you know, one vantage point, what would you like to see, Maria Quiñones-Sanchez, in regulation of these so-called recovery houses? What do you want to see change?
The state is the one that licenses them and therefore has to do the enforcement and the oversight.
So the city,
because it's a protected class, because of the medical conditions, we don't have oversight. So this is kind of the city. We absolutely, through our licensee code, have to monitor a lot of these houses. We cannot stop people from living, multiple people living in people's houses, and we have to do our part. But this is a state licensing issue. It is a recovery issue about one of the things that I've been asking since 2010, and I went back in the budget hearings, where I've been asking the Department of Behavioral Health, particularly CBH, that in some way or another reimburses fee-for-services. What we see is kind of the financial piece of this. That's a $1.7 billion organization responsible responsible for mental health in the city, I've said where there is a multiple address match, providers should be required to provide site visits, and where people live should be part of their recovery plan. It is 2016. I've yet to see one report.
All right, let's get to one quick question here before we get to the break. Paul in North Philly, welcome to Radio Times.
Hi. Actually, I have a comment and two quick questions.
Okay, we've only got a minute, so go ahead, Paul.
Okay, well, it just seems like the situation has the perfect summer problems, the collision of drugs, poverty, and suburban rights. And the traditional solution is enforcement. And enforcement has consequences, and there's two things. One, if you close down the recovery houses, you're going to render a lot of people homeless. Two, you're also going to force more drug use out in the streets. So isn't it time to maybe think about a harm reduction approach? Like, I mean, I know that Seth Williams has talked about a safe injection room, because that's one of the most objectionable things in the community is the public drug use besides the crime.
Hmm. All right, Paul, thanks for the call.
I've taken a lot of political heat for my support of Prevention Point, the Needle Exchange Program, and some of the very out-of-the-box thinking and services that we've been providing out there. We've set up a shelter in the winter. We've asked the Department of Behavioral Health to fund what we're calling the Kensington Counts Coalition strategy, which is we want to triage these men and we want to get people help, but we have to acknowledge that it's there and then be able to put the resources behind it so that we can get to the magnitude of the problem.
All right, about 10 seconds left. Al Lebrano, what's next for Airbridge?
We're hoping to see that somebody just takes an interest. People like Maria knew about it for a while, but a lot of people didn't. And so we're hoping that at least if you understand something, you can start to think about what you can do to fix it.
People in government, federal, state.
Yeah, yeah, especially the state.
All right. Al Lebrano, compelling story. Thank you so much for telling it today.
Thank you.
And we continue with Maria Quiñones-Sanchez and another guest coming right up on Radio Times. You are listening to WHYY in Philadelphia. This is Radio Times, and I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. We've been taking a close look at the opioid/heroin crisis in Philadelphia. City Councilwoman Maria Quiñones-Sanchez is here with us for the rest of the hour. And we're also joined now by Andrea Duffy, a Montgomery Township District Court judge and founder of the Drug Addiction Resource Alliance. Good to have you with us on Radio Times.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Sure. As we've been saying, and as many people know all too well, the heroin epidemic is not it's not solely an inner city crisis. In fact, according to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, 90% of teen heroin addicts are white. Many are from affluent families. And Andrea Duffy, I'm probably not telling you anything you don't already know.
No, I think some of my neighbors may be surprised that in Montgomery Township and Hatfield Township, the two jurisdictions I serve, I see a heroin addict every single day, usually more than one. So this problem certainly has extended to the suburbs and extended quite heavily. Also, of course, 309 corridor is where my two townships lie, so we do have the traffic for that drug corridor. So we see a lot of heroin cases, there's no doubt.
What usually brings an addict into your courtroom?
Well, often they're charged with, simple possession of paraphernalia or a controlled substance, that being heroin. But other times they're charged with crimes because they need to fuel their addiction. So they're charged with retail theft or identity theft or unauthorized use of a motor or vehicle because they often steal a car in order to go down to K&A or wherever it is in Philadelphia to get their supply. So it's not always just the mere possession of a controlled substance charge that we're dealing with, but all the other crimes that they need to commit in order to fund their problem.
Well, Andrea Duffy, what is the demeanor generally of the addict who goes before you in court? And what is this person generally seeking from you?
Well, oftentimes they're going to come in front of me for an arraignment, and that's where I have the obligation to set bail. Most of the times I find that they're very candid with me, and a lot of times they're begging me to get them inpatient placement. And this is where DARA started. I started talking to a lot of the providers about how difficult it was because right from the bench, I often make phone calls to try to get these people inpatient. And I was having problems and getting frustrated. So I knew if I were having these issues, obviously people who are not familiar with the system were as well. You know, some of these issues include insurance, transportation, the need for an assessment, and, of course, bed availability. So by reaching a bunch of providers, as well as bringing on to this alliance police departments, the Montgomery County District Attorney Kevin Steele and his office, adult probation and parole, defense counsel, we all have come together under this alliance to educate one another, to give each other updates, support. And it's a wonderful situation because we now have had our first forum last week, and we're planning another one as well in March where the public is invited to see what is being offered locally as far as therapy and placement.
And I'd like to get to that that first forum that you had in just a moment. And again, DARA is the acronym for Drug Addiction Resource Council, or Alliance, I'm sorry. And Maria, these are not anything, you know, what Andrea is talking about right now. The difficulty in access to resources, that's nothing that you're not unfamiliar with.
No, in fact, Councilman David O held a series of about a dozen town halls across the city, and we were very shocked to hear what were some of the obstacles, some of the regulatory obstacles around, you know, if folks were in a treatment center and they left, then they could, you know, then there's like a cooling off period before they can come back. Sometimes people are there, I think it was like 21 days, but they need longer, and Medicaid won't pay for it. I mean, we found so many obstacles and around access to the treatment, as the judge outlines, having the available bed for when the person says, I'm ready.
And if a person, Andrea, is an addict, and especially if they don't have family support, because so many families give up on folks that they find difficult to work with or deal with, it's got to be that much more difficult to navigate the system.
Oh, absolutely, because, and this is part of why I formed this alliance, because you can't just hand an addict on a piece of paper the name of a website or a couple brochures. We formed this because we wanted to bring the mountain to Muhammad, so to speak, and we wanted to make this as easy as possible for people. As the councilwoman said, when they are ready, you need to jump. And in my case, if I have a defendant in front of me for arraignment and I have abilities to get them in placement as part of their bail, then I'm going to jump because I have that unique ability as a district judge, the local judge who first encounters people after they've been arrested, to help them before it's too late. And that's why I've really tried my very best to access all the resources I can to get them help before we're reading about them in the obituaries.
So the first forum at DARA was held, DARA's first forum was held recently, and my understanding is Ray Wilson, a retired Hatfield Township Police Lieutenant, was set to speak at the inaugural gathering. His son, Michael, passed away. He died of a heroin overdose in 2015. Did he get to speak, Andrea?
He did. It was completely compelling. Everyone who attended, and I'm so thankful to everyone who helped make it possible and for all the people that attended, were truly touched by his words. I don't think anyone could tell a story better than a parent who went through this process and unfortunately had to come to this end, too, with his son. I think we need to listen to parents and their frustrations and also learn from them as well. What could we have done better for them? What more resources did they need to know about? So it was a very wonderful evening for everyone who attended. And I have to tell you, the thing that is most concerning me is that because of the stigma attached to addicts and their families, we need to find a way to get them to understand the resources, to get them to these forums without any kind of fear of any repercussions of being recognized and being identified as someone who has anything to be embarrassed about. This is a very real situation, and it happens to the best of families, as police officer Wilson obviously demonstrates.
Yeah, right. I think it's important, and that's why the Surgeon General report is really going to shed some light. This is about a disorder. You have 27 million people who in 2015 said they abused some sort of drugs. And people need to understand that this is a mental disorder, and that one sees whether it's prescription opiums and then lead to heroin gets into someone's system, they really do lose control. And we do have to take the stigma away from it. And I hope that between the general report, the national attention, the state attention, and locally what we deal with in Ground Zero, we can't deal with this from the public safety aspect. We're spending millions and millions of dollars, and in some cases billions of dollars. We need to be more proactive, more preventive about who are the people susceptible to this and how do we help them very early on in the process.
And indeed, Surgeon General Vivek Murthy is asking the public not to look at addiction as a character flaw. Mm-hmm. All right. Again, to the phones we go. Kensington and Charlie. Charlie, you are live on Radio Times. Welcome.
Hello. I'm Charlie. I'm in Kensington. I'm a transport driver for a drug and alcohol rehabilitation center, and I drive the streets of Kensington Monday through Friday from 8 to 4, and I see some very disheartening things on a daily basis. People walking around in drug stupors, out in the middle of traffic, in front of oncoming cars and trucks, green lights, red lights. It seems like they're so high on drugs they have no concept. Yeah. And I've seen people getting hit. And I've also witnessed facts where they're driving motor vehicles, which is also very disheartening because they could also injure other people. And sure. The worst thing about it that I see is the Philadelphia police don't seem to do anything. They turn the blind eye towards it because I see U-turns being made in the middle of four-lane intersections on red lights and police officers driving by and not pulling the person over.
Charlie, you know what? I'm gonna jump in because we, as always, we're short on time. But you make an important point, and indeed, I saw it in published reports that the police have their hands full with
other
issues.
Well, we've done some sweeps, and again, we do not want to criminalize people who have a mental health disorder. For those of us who strongly believe that, but we have done sweeps, and when we've done the sweeps with the police department, we have confiscated anywhere between 100 and 150 cars. They tend to be suburban women, suburban men. Many times when we take their cars, we're amplifying their problems because then now they don't have their cars to get to work or even get back home. We've done some of these to learn about what are the characteristics of the people coming down. Absolutely, the police department is concerned about this stuff. It is a manpower issue. We've spent millions of dollars around that Gurney Street encampment area, and we've been talking to police officials. They cannot be the ones to solve this. We need to solve it from a human services perspective.
Tell us about Maria and then Andrea. I'd like you to jump in the city suburban relationship in addressing this issue.
Well, Dr. Evans, who's the head of the Department of Behavioral Health, has been working not only with the state but with the counties around this. I think the issue becomes this jurisdictional issue about who's going to own the problem. And I see this, and I hate to put it in this light. Even when people overdose in the city of Philadelphia, if they have a Montgomery address, we're really quick to say that's a body that belongs to Montgomery, not to Philadelphia. I mean, the issue of...
Does that need to change?
It absolutely. We need to humanize this, and I think we need to own all of it. And if we want people to come out of the shadows with their addictions, then we can't treat it as though it's that person's problem or this person's problem. For us in the city of Philadelphia, we know this happens every day. For me, the most challenging and the most frustrating is it cannot be okay for folks to come to Kensington every single day and feed their addiction. And then, as the gentleman says, walk around Kensington as there are zombies and then hope that someone takes them home. We can no longer allow that to happen. And it's going to require all hands on deck around this stuff. But these are real people, someone's children, someone's daughter, someone's son. And we hear the stories every single day. But public safety is not the only place. And unfortunately, too many times they don't have the required training to deal with this.
Andrea Duffy?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to remember, too, it works both ways, and we have to work together because you know, the suburbanites are going down to Kensington and Allegheny to buy their supply. And, of course, drug addicts are coming up to the suburban areas to steal. So we have this back and forth, absolutely, as part of this whole disease and part of the whole addiction process. So, you know, we have to work on this together because our residents are going back and forth for part of the process.
Andrea Duffy, as a Montgomery Township, a district court judge, where do you think the resolution begins with the situation?
Well, I do agree that it can't all be on law enforcement. Criminalizing this is not the sole answer. Yes, I do. Try my very best when I do have someone charged to get them help right away. Sitting in jail is not going to do them any good if they really just need help. And maybe it's even their first or second offense. So obviously we need to do better as far as getting them that help early on, before the addiction gets worse, before it becomes fatal. And we need to, DARA is not, the be all and end all. It is our little piece of the puzzle trying to solve. But obviously we need to have more alliances formed, and I think they have to be on the local, county, state, and national level.
Human services.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And this alliance is not just for those who are criminally charged by any stretch. I want people to find out about these resources, especially families, so that as soon as they recognize signs of their loved one using, that they can get them help right away.
Okay, let's get back to the phones. Matt in Doylestown, welcome to Radio Times.
Hi there. The ugly secret in the suburbs like Doylestown is that heroin is tearing apart our communities. It's a huge problem that people just want to ignore. I know for a fact that people go down to Philadelphia and score as well. The suburban counties should be supplementing Philadelphia's effort to stem the drug trade, as well as funding for this to be treated as a health care epidemic and not something that people should be locked up for. It is a huge problem in the suburbs, and all of our children are suffering.
Thank you so much for the call to Radio Times.
Yeah, I mean, the state has put, and Governor Wolf has said, you know, that there is going to be a very focused effort on this. My fear is, just like typical bureaucrats, it's like you're going to create something new as opposed to talking to some of the people on the ground and figuring out what are the unorthodox ways in which we have to treat this. I know that when I went to Site Prevention Point, which has a very comprehensive mental health and outreach component, but the needle exchange piece was very, very controversial. Nobody wants this in their backyard. When we're expanding, whether it's methadone treatment or some of the other treatments in these neighborhoods.
Or recovery houses.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I have 3 jails and 300 recovery houses in this district. I inherited those. I try to be very respectful for people's quality of life, but there is absolutely a need, and everyone has to own a little bit of this. People can walk to all of these clinics, and when you look at the majority of the users who need some of these treatment centers, they're coming into other areas. You look at 8th and Girard, where there's 3,000 patients on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Those folks don't live there. They're coming from all over the city. So everybody has to own a little bit of this solution.
Andrea Duffy, my understanding is that one reason addicts relapse so frequently is that there's the lack of availability of care after rehab. Do you agree with this? And if so, how best do we tackle the problem?
Well, absolutely. There is no fix on this. It is a process, and I think that's what a lot of addicts forget about, and their families do too. They get so overjoyed at the fact that they've done some inpatient time, but this is definitely a long-term, even perhaps a lifetime commitment to sobriety. So we have to have those places in those recovery houses. We have to have therapy. We have to have ongoing treatment in place, because relapse is so huge. And Lieutenant Wilson even described how his son died because of one-time relapsing, and that is unfortunately the situation with many, many fatal overdoses.
And quickly, when we talk about treatment, we talk about funding, and is there the political will to get the money to fund these?
We already spend billions of dollars treating this, whether it's from our enhancing our public safety needs to underemployment to the subsidy of folks. So we're paying for this. The issue is the political will to realign those resources so we get them to people who need them when they need them.
Maria Quinones Sanchez, as always, great to have you here for Radio Times. Philadelphia City Councilwoman representing the 7th District. And Andrea Duffy, it was a pleasure. Thanks for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me. I'll be glad to speak with you more.
Andrea Duffy is a Montgomery Township District Court judge and founder of the Drug Addiction Resource Alliance. And remember, check out our Facebook page, whyy.org/Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Good to have you along for Radio Times.